This is James Corbett of The Corbett Report. It is the 31st of October, 2011, a.k.a. Halloween, and I am joined on the line this spooky evening by none other than Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. Bob Chapman, great to have you on. Thank you, as always, for joining us.
Well, thank you, and we've just had a very exciting week, including the Day of the Dead, so to speak, and I don't know why they continue to have programs about Halloween. It's rather gruesome, but anyway, I guess kids like to be scared, and it's an excuse to run around and trick-or-treat. Incidentally, for those of you who didn't know, trick-or-treating never existed before 1948, and I don't know who dreamt it up, probably somebody who owned a candy company. But anyway, today we're seeing some fallout here in the markets. Early on, the futures in NASDAQ, S&P, and the Dow previous to the opening and is off about 100 points on average. And I usually don't get into these kind of details, but I have to this morning, and the reason why is that something's going on in Europe that most people are not aware of. Recently, this past week, the German Bundestag, which is the House of Representatives, decided that they were going to vote for, unanimously, a piece of legislation that would allow them to use leverage in the monies which they contributed to the second bailout fund. And they're supplying about half the money. Now, it wasn't but about 4 or 5 weeks ago, the High Court in Karlsruhe said, you, the Bundestag, can okay more funds if you choose to do so, but you can't use leverage. And so the Bundestag went right ahead, passed legislation unanimously, and I point that out for a reason. The idea of them doing so, you have to say to yourself, well, why would they do that when now the High Court has said, well, we're going to rethink our position on this and come back to with an answer probably around the end of the year. And you got to think to yourself, are these guys trying to kick the can down the road again for a couple of months? And the answer is probably yes. Now, heretofore, the German people had said, and that's 65 to 70%, somewhere in that area, that they did not want one more finning or euro spent on bailing these countries out. And the Bundestag did it in spite of what the people think and want. And that's why I pointed that out, because these guys, these ladies who are in the House of Representatives there, they may very not, well not be coming back. And that's why they had that giant unanimous vote. And that was to cover themselves. Well, everybody else did it, so it was going to pass anyway. So I voted for it. And that's the political sociopathy associated with people like that. And they're the same in all countries. They just speak a different language, that's all. And so it isn't the way it seems to be. The information I've just given you has only been exposed by a handful of people here in the United States that I know of. I've only read of it in one or two other places. That's it. And I really cover the news. I haven't this morning read the foreign press, et cetera, and I'm sure they're talking about it. But what's interesting, we saw on CNBC today that Mr. Trichet, who is no longer the head of the European Central Bank, he didn't want to talk about that. He didn't allude to it at all, which I think is disingenuous. He talked about his successor, Mr. Draghi, Mario Draghi, from Italy. Both of them are members of the Illuminati, incidentally. And he said Mr. Draghi would do a terrific job. And it was kind of a bolster, so to speak. But people who can see what's going on have got to be getting out of these markets now. It's very interesting that two things happened, three overnight. One, I told you about a little bit earlier, and that was the stock market was off about 100 points. The FTSE in London's off about 100 Dow points. And so they're relatively right in line. But the President's Working Group on Financial Markets is definitely in the market, trying to hold the Dow up, so to speak. And at the same time, this last evening, at midnight, we saw the price of gold in Tokyo down $30.80. That midnight is Eastern Daylight Time. And silver was off 63 cents. At 6:55 a.m., gold was off 28.20, and then silver was off 104. And then it got better during the course of the past hour or so. And so the Working Group of Financial Markets was in the market driving the price of silver and gold down. At the same time, they were trying to keep the markets up. And it's not unusual. People like myself who have been in and following and researching international markets for over 50 years, you look for things like that. And so we've got a very bad event that could be coming. In other words, there's no deal in Europe to extend the amount of money necessary for the six nations that are in trouble, the leader of the pack being Greece. And so there's a lot of bad news out there. And I think if people really understood what was going on, and they will over the next week, the market should easily go down 500 points. Of course, you're going to have the U.S. government there through the Exchange Stabilization Fund trying to rig the market. And we'll see which is most powerful, the sellers in the market or the U.S. Treasury trying to keep it up. And the other event that happened overnight was the Japanese yen started to gain more power against the dollar and other currencies. And the reason the Japanese yen is so strong, in spite of all the problems that they have from the tsunami and the nuclear and the slowdown in the international market of selling things to one another, is that it's being used in a carry trade, has been for a long time. And people borrow yen because they can borrow it at about 0.25%. And so they borrow the yen. Let's say a bank in New York buys $1 billion worth of yen. And they don't put up $1 billion. It's leveraged about 90%. And they borrow the yen, then they take it and buy dollars. So essentially, they're buying dollars and paying 0.25% interest. And then they take that money and they put it in treasuries. Let's say it's 2.33 for the 10-year U.S. Treasury note. That's the yield, 2.33. So let's say their net cost is the gain is 2%, and they're happy with that. but it also puts tremendous pressure on the upside, on the quality of the yen that really shouldn't exist and should have not existed for the last several years. They do it in other currencies with low interest rates as well, and the dollar is one of them. Only it's not as easy to borrow the dollar as it is the yen. So that's why the Japanese government has stepped in and sold yen into the market to push the price down.
Well, both of those are very interesting stories, and obviously the value of the yen particularly interesting to me here in Japan. But let's go back to that German story for a moment, because that is a huge story, and I haven't heard anyone break that yet, so I'm glad that you broke it here on the Corbett Report today. But just doing a quick scan on Reuters, I did find an article from the 26th of October last week, Euro gains versus most currencies on rescue fund leverage. And it starts out by saying the euro rose against most currencies on Wednesday, cheered by reports that the European bailout fund aimed at containing the region's debt crisis will be boosted as much as 1 trillion euros by that wonderful bankster magic. But then I think buried in about the 12th or 13th paragraph, it says earlier, Germany's lower house of parliament approved a motion to strengthen the eurozone rescue fund through leveraging, providing Chancellor Angela Merkel with the mandate she needs to negotiate at the European summit in Brussels. So as you say, I think that the brazenness of that not only reveals the political sociopathy of the people at the top of the system, but also I think there must be people in the media and other analysts who've noticed what's going on there and haven't talked about this yet or don't think this is going to be an issue. I don't understand what they're thinking in this.
Well, you have the mainline newspapers that are and other outlets in the media that are controlled by the money powers, the bankers, and the financial centers of Frankfurt, Paris, London, and New York, and they omit reporting things in the news. And what happens is usually you get Der Spiegel, which means in German the Mirror, out of Hamburg. They'll usually break a story like that. And or Handelsblatt, which tends to be, I don't want to be unkind, but it's kind of between mainline journalism and the National Enquirer. But they will usually come out with things like that. Or Le Monde in Paris, the Tribune de Genève, but we'll have to see. But they're trying to hide this thing. And they can't. I mean, there was an announcement on Friday late that the court said, hey, so we told you couldn't do that. So let's see where this all leads. I mean, they're desperate to try to make this thing work. And it's unworkable. An unnatural association, which is the European Union, and we'll call it a subdivision, the Eurozone, 27 members in the EU, of which 17 belong to the Eurozone. So there's 10 countries with their own currency still that didn't want to join the euro. But I think ultimately, and I've said this from 13 years ago, the euro is doomed. There's no way it can work. And this is where this is all headed. And the bankers and politicians have staked their future on this, especially the bureaucrats who are in Brussels and in Luxembourg, who run the European Union and get paid outrageous salaries to do it. And they all want one world government. And one world government is very important to them because they believe that they know better what's good for the people than the people do. And it's sort of here we are, and we're leading things, and you're sheep, and we're going to move you from one pen to the other. The point here is they want world government, and that's why they're not giving the ghost up on, that's apropos today too, giving the ghost up, on forming this one world government, one world currency, which the euro would be the centerpiece, but it would be called something else. And so that's why they're doing what they're doing. And so I think what the Bundestag knowingly did was to extend the timeline by brazenly ignoring what the court had said. And that is what they said. So we have to wait for this to play out. But as the days go by, you're going to see more and more pressure on the stock markets. You're going to see interest rates in Europe particularly start to nudge higher. And you will continue to see the U.S. Treasury in the markets manipulating so that the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the equivalent there are don't plunge. And at the same time, they will continue to try to put temporary pressure on gold and silver and commodities. And there's a titanic battle going on here. And I think that sovereign nations who understand what is going on and have been buyers of gold and silver will step up their purchases because these are pretty good prices. And they like buying on dips. And so no matter what they do, they're going to be unsuccessful. They made a mess out of this thing, starting from the very beginning at the Maastricht Treaty, where they had everybody having a public debt to GDP ratio of 3% minimum. In other words, you couldn't go over 3% and you'd be fined. Well, everybody went over 3%, nobody was fined. It's like a paper tiger. And they knew that these six nations, and perhaps others, could have gotten into the situation that they are in today. In fact, most of them should have never been admitted in the first place, and they know that. And I think I hold Germany responsible for that. And the reason why is they wanted to export goods to them, which they did. And Germany did enormously well doing so. And that was very important to them. Now, that reflects parallel to what the Swiss did recently in deliberately devaluing their currency. I mean, unheard of in the last over 150 years. And I believe it's a terrible mistake what they did. But they did that to stay competitive, and that's why I mention it, because the Swiss franc had become so strong. The same thing has happened with the yen, and that's why finally the Bank of Japan today sold yen, trying to drive its value down. How permanent that will be remains to be seen. I don't have an answer to that. I don't think anybody else does. But these things all enter the same vortex. The same reasons underlie what's going on in Europe. And if Europe goes down, the whole world's going to go with it. And there is exposure in the United States to this problem. I saw a GAO figure of $670 billion exposure, and I haven't researched that myself, but that's a lot of money. And I noticed something very interesting as well. Now get this, because this is a real beauty. Five major banks in New York had sold CDS, credit default swaps, insurance, to French and other banks on Greek debt. Now, this is the same thing that MF Global just did. And Mr. Cuisine, he used to be with Goldman Sachs and then the governor and senator from New Jersey, he destroyed the company. MF is going into bankruptcy, MF Global. And that's because he was on the long side. He was a buyer. that debt that went down in value. And they're always leveraged. So instead of going down 10%, they might have gone down 70 or 80%. So with that in mind, you have these New York banks. And the contention in the press is the losses that would be on a Greek default would be about $17.3 billion. Wall Street has already admitted to $75 billion. And I've been writing about, and I think the figure is $150 billion. Now, with that said, the unregulated, private, derivative market is run by the players who are in that market. And they came out on Friday and said, well, this 50% devaluation of Greek debt, which was agreed to in this agreement that was made this past week in Europe, constitutes a voluntary default on the part of the lender, in this case, the French banks. So it's not default because they agreed to it. I mean, I've never heard such spurious reasoning in my life. So the government's going to step in. And, you know, a default is a default is a default. I mean, the best they can do is only pay the French banks half the money because of the 50% write-down. We'll have to see. But this is the kind of chicanery that goes on every day. And they think it's normal. Well, it's not normal.
Well, chicanery is the new normal, perhaps, in this economy. Well, again, some fascinating stuff there, but let's switch gears entirely, because I wanted to take a look at a very interesting story from the a recent edition of The Forecaster, the one that just came out on Saturday, that I thought was, well, it shows a little bit about how the system is really functioning, and I suppose it should come as no surprise, but it's still interesting to see when we get stories like this. It says a Minnesota company's parts ended up in explosive devices that killed and maimed American and coalition troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. The indictment does not name the Minnesota company, referring to it only as Company A, but CBS News has confirmed that the company is in fact Digi International, based in Minnetonka. According to an indictment, the company was tricked into shipping their parts to individuals and companies who lied about what they would be used for. The indictment states that IEDs are responsible for more than 60% of all U.S. casualties in the Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts. And the story goes on from there, but I think it's interesting to see these types of stories because, of course, we all know that any time there is warfare, there are, is obviously great profit to be made, and there are obviously people who will step in who are happy to supply the parts that can be used for the weapons and the warfare and the machinery that's used to kill. And I think it's kind of a sad indictment of the world that we live in, but one that is there nonetheless, that there is always the war profiteers, and whether or not this company knew what they were doing and all of that, I'm sure will be sorted out by the wonderful blind U.S. justice system. But I guess the point is one that's really more historical than it is just about this particular case, that people have always profited off of war. And of course, the banksters have long known about how to play both sides in conflict. So what's your thoughts on this story and its significance?
I hark back to Arthur Miller and the Death of a Salesman, 1948. He also wrote The Crucible as well. I met him one time. I had dinner with him.
Did you meet Marilyn Monroe?
Yes, I did.
Wow.
One evening. And she never said 10 words all night. We ate, we talked about different things that were going on, and we left. It was a long way from New York City out to Long Island. We had taken the train, which I guess is the only safe way to travel. Anyway, I think his name was Willie Loman, and they had been building air engines for airplanes during the war, and they didn't build them as well as they should, but they put them in the planes anyway. And because of the malfunction, the planes would fall from the sky. And one of the people who was killed in one of those events was his son, you know, Willie Loman's son in this. And I think it's Willie. It's a long time ago.
I think I can confirm, yes, Willie Loman.
Yeah, the same year, Finian's Rainbow won the Best Broadway Musical, and it was a wonderful play, How Are Things in Glacamora. It was the lead song. It's a wonderful song. But anyway, this proved positive that in history, in every instance, there is always some people who will do things that they're not supposed to do. It's just part of human nature. 95%, from my point of view, who people have lived on the face of the earth are fine people. The other 5% aren't. And those are the kind of people who do things like that. We have such a wide net of people in our subscriber base, thousands of them all over the world, that we get stories like that continually. Not about that subject, but things that you never see from the local newspaper, whether it's in Würzburg in Germany or Shanghai, you know, we get stories that other people just don't get. And that has not been in the national news because they don't want people to know that those kind of things went on. And the same thing is with these private corporations that have been supplying support and mercenaries for these wars that we have in these foreign countries. And I think it points out that we have not evolved in that manner. We continue to continue to regress into barbarism. And it's just something within human nature. Of course, you have to have the catalyst. And those, of course, are the bankers and Wall Street and the City of London today. What they were on the 11th century, I don't know. But I'm sure their counterparts were there, which they probably learned from. But that's the way the world is.
Well, a rather sad indictment of humanity, but not one that I think is particularly far out there. I think it's unfortunate, but true. Well, then, switching subjects again, Occupy Wall Street. It's difficult to follow from here in Japan. I, of course, can read the news stories that are coming out on it, but I think it would be a different thing to be in the hemisphere and maybe feeling what's in the air. What do you think, going into what the, maybe this, is this the second month now already of Occupy Wall Street? What do you think, is this gaining momentum, losing momentum? Is there anything behind this? What's happening here?
Well, I think the momentum is linear, but it'll start to fade in time. It's tough sitting in tents down on Wall Street in a park when it's snowing and raining simultaneously. I think all we have to do is look at the genesis of how this was financed. It's like follow the money, the old saying, and then you'll find out who's doing what to whom and why. I will say, as an outcrop of this, and before I get into who financed this thing, a lot of very good people got involved in that movement or demonstration in many cities throughout the world. And they were talking about the other side of the coin. The basic complaints of Occupy were certainly correct. But people like this always start out with a perfectly valid premise. Now, let's move on to figure out what happened after that. Well, they came up with what I would call a manifesto of what things have to be done. And it looked like it was written by Karl Marx. Of course, it couldn't be. He's been dead over 100 years. but I think you get the drift. The intention, I believe, from the very beginning, because when I saw some of the characters involved, who are old-time communists from the 60s and 70s, who I had met, some of them, because I used to demonstrate opposite them. And I knew something was up. But the people who have joined in have neutralized, to a great extent, that hardcore, we'll call it socialist, mode of thinking. And I think that it's been an educational process for a lot of people who went out and was listening to one side, and then the other side came in and said, hey, wait a minute, you don't want to go do that. I mean, that's what Karl Marx was doing. These are the answers here, and we got to get rid of the Federal Reserve and things like that. So there's a lot of good people in there doing their job and informing others who don't understand what these people are up to. With that said, let's find out who the financiers were. The Tides Foundation, funded by Progressive Insurance, and its founder, Peter B. Lewis, whose best friend, as far as we can discern, is one George Soros. And for those of you who don't know his background very quickly, he's a billionaire. He beats markets by getting inside information because he's a member of the Illuminati. He's been convicted twice of stock fraud. Once in Paris, he appealed in Paris and lost, and then appealed to the Human Rights Commission of the United Nations and lost there as well. And he's been convicted in Hungary of doing the same thing. He was the fellow who had and financed all those color revolutions in Eastern Europe. Mr. Lewis is a billionaire, and he meets very, very often with Mr. Soros and the head of the House of Rothschild, which I find interesting. And there are a number of other cast of characters here, some of whom you know and some of whom you don't know. One of the side issues here is Tides Foundation received billions of dollars for funding for AIDS treatment centers throughout the world, particularly in Africa. And I've lived in Africa, so I know what the problem is there. And but what really gets me here, not only their Marxist bent, Lewis promotes things such as the outlawing of Christian nativity scenes at Christmas. And he protects something called NAMBLA, N-A-M-B-L-A. It's called the North American Man-Boy Love Association, whose motto is sex before eight, before it's too late, and legalizing and promoting homosexual marriages throughout the United States. So these are the kind of people who financed Occupy. And I hope all of the people who were there know that. I'm just one voice in the wilderness. And this is where this thing came from. And these are the kind of characters that are involved.
That is a bizarre connection. I must admit, I haven't heard that. And I suppose other than that, I think none of the connections that you were talking about there are particularly surprising to me, because I think it's long been held that people like Soros and those that ilk have been founding and funding this movement and others, just as they have in other countries with the color revolutions. So I don't think that comes as particularly a surprise. But what I found interesting was the fact that you posit that some of the people who have joined this movement are really neutralizing some of the hardcore socialist element that had started it. I think that's interesting and hopeful, because to me, that's been my point all along. If it doesn't particularly matter who started it, as long as we can co-opt it for our own purposes, so to speak. And I think that's where the issue of the momentum really comes in. Do you think this is going to be a game changer for the 2012 election? And if so, in what way?
Well, I think it's made people more aware of what's going on and verified the fact that what they had been thinking was correct. And that is that there's some serious problems. And the problems that they had personally recognized, but not talked about, because people are afraid to talk because, you know, they're not intellects and most people are high school graduates and they don't picture themselves as being experts of anything except the job that they're doing. And I know I grew up among them and I know what they're like and how they act. Although there are some cities in the United States like New York and Boston and Philadelphia where everybody thinks they know everything, which is not true. But anyway, that's what they think. And so I think this verified the fact to them that such things were going on and such things had transpired. And yes, I think it's going to make people more aware. But it doesn't alter the fact, as an extension of that into the political arena, that you have people like Ron Paul, who is deliberately deprived of airtime during debates, is deliberately kept off of radio and television by major channels. They might have 10 appearances of Mrs. Perry's and Romney, and they might have 2 of him, and that sort of thing. And people have got to understand that there have to be dramatic changes, not only in the United States government, but many others as well. And I think that the acceptance of such would lead people to believe that they need somebody other than the current president, but not most of these people who might oppose him for the Republican Party. And if Ron Paul is not nominated, he probably would run as an independent. And that would be devastating for both parties, but particularly the Republicans, because there is a very, very strong body of people who are willing to put their money up to finance this. I mean, the last debt, credit bomb or whatever it was called, money bomb, was $2.5 million. And coming off of the internet that I think succeeded 2 others with a million each or something like that. So the power to raise money is there. Not, of course, in the league with Mr. Obama and the Republicans, who are the front runners, who are the darlings of the Illuminists. They receive hundreds of millions. But the point here is this, that if Ron Paul is not elected and people like him are not elected with him, the U.S. economy, the U.S. political scene, the financial structure is doomed. And it's as simple as that. And then Europe will no longer be the catalyst of the downside. It might be the United States. I saw this morning that perhaps Stockton, California would be a victim of bankruptcy. And I think that, I can't think of her last name, Whitney, she's an analyst in New York, was right. It just took a little bit longer to happen because government was lending the municipalities money. But she said 100 municipalities would go under, and I think she's right. And it just took a little longer. But, you know, see, Wall Street made an issue of that she had been incorrect, but never mentioned the fact that those municipalities and states, counties, whatever, were being funded by the U.S. government. They forgot about that conveniently on CNBC, et cetera. And that's the kind of journalism you get. And that's why I like doing things the way I do it. I don't have my own show. I don't go on any mainline TV, even if I'm invited. In fact, Fox tried several times to get me on. I said, no. You know, why should I go in there and go head-to-head with these guys when I can get the truth message out, and that's all I'm interested in. And I was also invited to do the narrative in this recent History Channel program on the Federal Reserve. And I says, if you want to film it in the country, I mean, that's fine. I said, but I'm not going to Washington to do it. And so they picked somebody else. But I pass on a lot of opportunities because I'm only interested in one thing, and telling people where I think things are going, the unvarnished truth, and the fact that you've got to do something, or you could end up in an internment camp, end up broke, and maybe end up dead.
Unfortunately, very true, which is why it's an honor to be having you on the program every week and getting that truth message out, because obviously that is the most important thing, and we can't allow any station or any person to censor that ability. So I'm glad to hear the unvarnished, unplugged Bob Chapman every week, and I'm sure the listeners are too. So on that note, speaking of the unplugged Bob Chapman, tell us about the International Forecaster and how people can get their hands on it.
Well, the forecast is about business, finance, economic, social, and political issues all over the world. We publish on Wednesdays and Saturdays by email. It runs about 35 to 40 pages each time. We have a hard copy that goes out twice a month for those who are not on the internet. And everything you need to know each week is in that publication. You can get a free introductory copy by going to TheInternationalForecaster.com, The International, FORECASTER.com. You can also go to www.INTFORECASTER.com. That's INTForecaster.com. And for those of you who would like to ask a question, we answer everyone. And that's why right now there's about 600 emails sitting in there waiting for me. But we do answer everyone. You can get a copy of either publication. And we also offer a report on our latest recommendations in gold and silver shares. And you can get all that by going to I got a mental blank, isn't that something? Bob, B-O-B, at INTFORECASTER.com. Bob at INTForecaster.com. Or you can call toll-free 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178. And you can get copies there. And for those of you who would like to become subscribers, they have an offer there of a free one-year subscription. And the offer that they're making is really terrific. You should take advantage of it. And I apologize for losing it through the middle of it, but I was trying to, while I'm on the air, I'm always watching two or three different channels to find out what's going on in the world, so that I don't have any downtime, and I was distracted.
It's perfectly understandable.
I'm not losing it yet.
Not yet. All right. Well, you are an exceptionally busy man, so we thank you, as always, for your time. Bob Chapman, it's a pleasure having you on, and let's do this again next Monday.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for listening.